भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, Texts 32 and 33. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Sama Asana Asinaha Samalkayo Yatashukam Hastabut Sangha Adhaya Svana Sagra Kritekshanaha Pranasya Sodayan Margam Pura Kumbhakare Chakai Viparyaya Napishanayar Abhyasen Nirjitendriyaha Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Sama Asana Asinaha Samakayo Yatashukam Hastabhutsanga Adaya Svanasagra Kritekshanaha Pranasya Sadayen Maragam Pura Kumbhakka Kritchakai Viparyayena Pisanair Abhyase Nirjitendriyaha Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Same, having a level surface, Asane, on the seat, Asinaha, sitting, Samakayaha, sitting with the body straight and erect. Yatasukam, sitting comfortably. Hasto, the two hands. Utsange, in the lap. Adhaya, placing. Svanasa agra, on the tip of one's nose. Actually, it says on the tip of one's own nose. Krita, focusing. Ikshanaha, the glance. Pranasya, of the breath. Shodhayet, should purify. Margam, the pathway. Purakumbhakarechakai, by the mechanical breathing exercises. Or pranayama. Viparyayena, by reversing the processes, namely Rechaka, Kumbhaka, and Puraka, Api, also, Shanai, following the process step by step, Abhyaset, one should practice Pranayama. Nirjita, having controlled. Indriya, the senses. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, sitting on a level seat that is not too high or too low, keeping the body straight and erect, yet comfortable, placing the two hands on one's lap and focusing the eyes on the tip of one's nose, one should purify the pathways of breathing by practicing the mechanical exercises of Puraka, Kumbhaka and Rechaka. And then one should reverse the procedure, Rechaka, Kumbhaka, Puraka. Having fully controlled the senses, one may thus practice pranayama step by step, purport. According to this procedure, the hands would be placed palms upward, one on top of the other. Thus one may practice pranayama through mechanical breath control in order to achieve steadiness of the mind. As stated in the Yoga Sastra, Antaralaksho Bahir Drishti Stira Chitta Susangataha. The eyes which generally see externally must be turned inward, and thus the mind is steadied and fully controlled.
Om Agyanatimirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmahe Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tavati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Angum Langayate Gurim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Krishna is explaining the yoga system to Uddhava. And here we have a description of the pranayama. Pranasya sodayet margam. One should follow the path or purify the pathway of the breath. Krishna explains this also in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Similar verse in that it describes how the yogi should situate himself in a place where he won't be disturbed, and can practice the pranayama, asana, pranayama, etc., pratyahara. Basically the Ashtanga yoga system. And the purpose the reason for doing this is to gradually purify the senses so that one has sensual, emotional, intellectual control. Krishna explains in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that in order to perfect yoga practice, one has to have control of the mind and the senses and the intelligence, and that the yogi, the aspiring transcendentalist, in order to be successful, has to have complete control of the mind and the senses, and especially the mind has to be free from desire, material desires. And so therefore this practice is described by Prabhupada in the purports, how the yogis would go to sacred places where they would be able to withdraw from social interaction and withdraw from the sensual activities. This is the performance of the asana, you know, drilling the respiration through the pranayama process. Then, as described here, turning one's focus within. This is the purpose of gazing at the tip of the nose. It's so that one's not distracted by the external activities, external forms. Rather, one is able to then turn one's attention within. And of course, the purpose, the goal of all of this is to see the Lord, who's situated within one's heart. Krishna's manifest in the heart as the super soul. So the whole purpose of this yogic exercise is to see the Lord. Right? So
whole purpose of these activities. Of course, Prabhupada makes a point that in this day and age, practically speaking, this type of practice is impossible. You know, this pranayama process is very strict, it's very rigorous, it requires focus and attention. And practically speaking, in this day and age, you know, people don't have the capacity to do it. They can't do it. Not possible. Can't sit still for longer than about 30 seconds. And certainly achieve the goal. And even if, as Bhajanari mentioned yesterday, as Prabhupada often will point out, it mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita, even yogis who were qualified and who practiced the yoga system for even tens of thousands of years, still even they had difficulties when confronted with the realities of existence, and that is that it's very, very difficult to find, especially in this day and age, to find a place where one won't be disturbed, so that one can practice the yama and the niyama, you know, practice austerities, practice celibacy especially. So, in the Kali Yuga, because people are not qualified, manda su manda matayo manda bhagya hi upadrutaha, it's described in the Bhagavatam, slow, not intelligent, prone to bad association, mind always disturbed, a more simpler but equally powerful, if not more powerful, process is Harinama, 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 Ivakivalam, Kalo, Nasjeva, 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 Gatir, Anyata. So, in the Kali Yuga, where people have a short duration of life, they're always disturbed, they're slow to take to spiritual life, they need something that has a little bit more punch, if you like. And so, therefore, the yoga practice, if you like, for the age that is recommended is the chanting of Hare Krishna. Simple process. And even that's not so easy. You know, in the time of Mahaprabhu, there were very many elevated, you know, personalities, Siddha, Deha, you know, perfect persons. And so their devotional practice in chanting Hare Krishna was to sit down and chant 64 rounds a day, if not more. Which in one sense is, you know, not difficult. If you chant 64 rounds before the sun comes up, then, you know, before midday, chant 16 rounds before the sun comes up, 16 rounds before midday, 16 rounds again in the afternoon, and then 16 before you go to bed. It's quite easy. But it's not a fact. It's not that easy, actually. You know, there was last week there was a devotee promoting, you know, the GBC should all chant 64 rounds a day. One of the devotees' responses was, when did you start chanting 64 rounds a day? Not easy. And Prabhupada recognized that when he lived in Vrindavan, and this was a real problem. The Vaishnava culture had fallen, the Vaishnava community had fallen into ill repute. They were disrespectful, or disrespected, shall we say, because they weren't behaving properly. Where
persons were trying to imitate the elevated practice of bhakti as demonstrated by the by personalities like the six Goswamis and the other, you know, Nitya, Siddha, eternal associates of Mahaprabhu. And, you know, despite their best efforts to live in a sacred place like Vrindavan and chant, you know, 64 rounds a day, it was seen that the Babaji's basically were falling down. They're having difficulty just sticking at chanting 64 rounds a day, even though it's considered to be an easier process, certainly easier than this process that's recommended here. Even that was difficult. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada, their focus was on chanting, hearing and chanting, because that's the basis of bhakti. That's the basis upon which it stands. And so therefore Prabhupada said, you know, 16 rounds is the most important order of the spiritual master, and that has to be adhered to, so that we get our connection with the holy name. But at the same time, seeing the qualification of the devotees, especially when he was initiating them in 26 Second Avenue in New York on the Lower East Side, and Prabhupada said, okay, absolute minimum is 16 rounds. Because you could see that the people that he was preaching to couldn't sit down and chant 64 rounds in a day. Not only the people on the Bowery, but even the you know, so-called more elevated or more pious persons who lived in India who tried to do these things, they became a mockery of devotional service, of chanting Hare Krishna. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, following in their footsteps, emphasized the chanting of Hare Krishna along with preaching and active devotional service. The whole purpose of performing the yoga system is to cease material existence, basically. You know, the asanas, yama, niyana, asana, pranayama, the performance of the Ashtanga yoga system is basically to stop material existence and to purify the inner workings of the emotional and intellectual, the mental and intellectual capacity, so that one's purified body, purified mental and intellectual state is such that one's able to look within and see the super soul residing within the heart. So the cessation of material existence is the purification of these, of the physical and the gross and the subtle, so that one's purified to be actually able to see the Lord. The previous acharyas understood that the nine items of devotional service, based on the chanting of Hare Krishna, Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, associating with the devotees, living in a sacred place rather than retiring to the forest, you know, Srila Prabhupada established temples wherein devotional service was the prime practice, so that, you know, this whole purpose of yoga practice to cease material existence was achieved by, instead of a process of negation, there was a process of positive engagement, so that the same result was achieved, basically. The same result that can be achieved by a yogi going into the Himalayas and meditating in a sacred place can be achieved by anyone who practices the process of bhakti. the same result is achieved. That's the potency, if you like, of chanting Hare Krishna and being engaged in the nine items of devotional service, is that one achieves the same result as those who perform this yoga practice. In fact, it could be argued that that performance is even more effective, because one automatically comes to an understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one then automatically, in knowing Krishna, then understands the Paramatma, the Brahman, his own identity, what his relationship is. I'm a servant of Krishna, and my purpose is to do service. So the acharyas, rather than recommending these yoga practices, which in this day and age basically are performed for material benefits, you know, for good health, for steadying the mind, for basically material benefits. And of course, that's not the purpose. The purpose of the yoga practice is not for material benefit. The purpose of yoga practice is to come to this realization of one's spiritual identity, ultimately to see the super soul within. So the practices of bhakti are considered by the acharyas to be more effective, and we can see it, they're more effective than this yoga system of retiring to a sacred place and then sitting on a place which is level, not too high, not too low, then, you know, doing the asanas, drilling the breathing, looking within. The it's mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Iha Yasya Hare Dasye Karmana Manasagira Nikilas Vaktivasta So Jivan Mukta So Uchite. That it's described that a person who's able to engage in devotional service, in other words, to become a servant of Krishna, Hare Dasye means to be a servant of Hari. What? Hare Dasye. Become a servant of Hari. And then engage. Mana, kamana, our karma, our actions. Kamana, manasa, our thoughts. Gira, our speech. One who is engaged in that fashion, under the guidance of the spiritual master, is considered to be Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul. And the process of bhakti is so potent that one is able to realize one's spiritual identity even if one is not very advanced. Even if we're not very advanced, we may not have a mature understanding of the process of devotional service. We may not have a complete handle on all of the details of devotional service, but even a neophyte who follows the nine items of devotional service, especially chanting Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada prescribed basically chanting 16 rounds, and then being keeping oneself fully engaged in the daily practice, a regulated practice. Many of these principles are the same, even in the yoga practice. It's regulated, you know, it's ordered, it's structured, it's very deliberate. But for one who, even if one's a neophyte, one may not be very advanced. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna and then engaging in the regulated practice of devotional service, one is elevated automatically, because the process of bhakti has great potency. Then one can come to a level of steadiness very quickly. And as Krishna explains in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Niraharasya Dehina, even if one's embodied, well, we're all embodied, Vishayavini Vartante Niraharasya Dehina, Rasavarajam Rasopyasya Param Drishtvani Vartate, because the chanting of Hare Krishna elevates us to a higher platform of consciousness and gives us a taste for devotional service. And when we engage in devotional service, we experience a higher realm of existence, and automatically one is able to give up the lower activities, the lower taste. So that this negation, this process of, you know, giving things up, is not as rigorous for the aspiring devotee as it is for the yogi, who has to perform all of these austerities to purify oneself, following the Ashtanga Yoga system. So the acharyas, and Srila Prabhupada especially, you know, encouraged. Okay, we have our sadhana practices. Actually, all of our devotional service is sadhana. All of it. But we have the hearing and chanting, shravanam, kirtanam. So Prabhupada, you know, encouraged the devotees, 4 o'clock, wake up, go to Mangalarti, chant one's japa, or worship the deity. Then even those activities that we perform in the daytime, those activities are an opportunity for us to engage our natural propensity to act, which would ordinarily get us into trouble, right? But when performed in devotional service, actually is purifying, powerfully purifying, then one can make rapid advancement, make progress in devotional service, and then one doesn't have to undergo these rigorous austerities, and automatically one achieves a higher taste. Automatically one becomes satisfied by the performance of those activities. As soon as one agrees to surrender to Krishna, then automatically one is considered to be Jivan Mukta. That's how potent the practice of devotional service is. Of course, it has to be done, you know, it has to be done very carefully. It's not something that just happens in a haphazard fashion. It's something that actually has to be performed as deliberately as the Ashtanga yogi has to be careful about, you know, performing his asanas and pranayama, pratyahara and so forth. The process of devotional service has to be continuous. Tivrena bhakti yogena. It has to be focused. Bhakti. And it has to be undisturbed, if you like. What is it? Mamchayovi abhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samatichaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So Krishna mentions at the end of the 14th chapter how devotional service has to be performed without deviation. One has to maintain one's focus. Just as a yogi has to, you know, sit and keep his eyes looking at the tip of his nose. Oof. Oof. That's hard work even as it is. But bhakti has potency. It has power. It shouldn't be underestimated. This was Durvasa Muni's mistake, you know, in not realizing the potency of Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj was a devotee,
and he was engaged in, you know, pretty much the 9 items of devotional service. The same type of activities that we perform. Get up in the morning, go to Mangaladi, chant your rounds, worship the deity. So, you know, Amarish Maharaj just looked like an ordinary bhakta. And Durvasa Muni was a big, big, big yogi. So when he visited Amarish Maharaj, he became offended when he found out that Amarish Maharaj had drunk some water to break his goddessy fast. This was Amarish Maharaj's offence to Durvasa Muni. He was following goddessy. The next day was Dwadasi. He had to break his fast before a certain time. But Durvasa Muni was his guest. So ordinarily, you know, it's considered poor etiquette if you take prasadam before your guests, right? Well, I've discovered that often I go to my friend's place, you know, and they're serving me prasadam, they're not eating anything, and I said, what's going on? How come you're not eating anything? And they said, well, actually, we had something beforehand. That's how come they're able to talk for 3 hours and not eat anything. Anyway, this is actually, you know, if you invite a guest to your place, then you shouldn't eat before them. That's the etiquette, right? So Durvasa Muni was offended because Amarish Maharaj had drunk some water to honour his Ekadasi Brata. You know, we wouldn't ordinarily consider, you know, taking water as having broken Ekadasi. If you're like, okay, what's next? Yet Durvasa Muni got offended. You know, so he cursed Amarish Maharaj and pulled a hair out of his head, threw it in the ground. A big demon came out. Okay, get Amarish Maharaj for this great offence. So, anyway, because Amarish Maharaj, even though it appeared that he was just a simple bhakta, still, what does Krishna say? Kuntaya pratijanihi name bhakta pranasyati. Krishna promises Arjuna, you know, declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. So, when Durvasa Muni wanted to harass Amarish Maharaj, then the Lord sent his Sudarshan Chakra to destroy the demon created by Durvasa Muni and then chase Durvasa Muni and kill him. So the practice of bhakti, and also those who practice bhakti have potency. The process of devotional service has great, immense potency. As Brajanari said yesterday, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. So sometimes we become too familiar with the process, or because we're hanging on to our attachments, we think that it doesn't work. We're chanting Hare Krishna and we're following the process, but we're still maintaining our material attachments. This is a tense offence in chanting Hare Krishna, to maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions about them. We hang on to our material attachments and then we complain, Krishna, how come this process doesn't work? Well, the reason why the process is not working is because you're not following it, that's why. But if we follow it strictly, then it has great potency. And invested within the devotee is potency also. So if we're puzzled, oh, it's not working, why am I making any advancement? Well, then we have to look within. That's really this process of looking within, as practiced by the yogis, also has to be practiced by the devotees. They have to look within and look for the anattas and pull them out, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, we have to be like a gardener. Right? So we put a fence up to protect our garden, which is the same as keeping out bad association. But at the same time, as we're watering the garden, which is the hearing and chanting, along with the bhakti lata bees, along with our devotional service, also grow the weeds of anattas. So we have to be effective as gardeners, and that means pulling out the weeds. Can't be lazy in that process. But if one is effective, if one is attentive, especially, that means attentive in chanting Hare Krishna. That's our, the weed, the pulling out of weeds is done when we're chanting Hare Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how, and we were talking about this the other day, as the chanting of Hare Krishna is much like heating up sugarcane juice. Right? When you heat to make sugar. When we heat up sugarcane juice, and what happens? The froth and bubbles and the dirt and impurities come to the surface. They have to be scooped off and discarded. So as our material attachments manifest in our thinking, then we have to scoop them up and discard them. And the way we do that is by turning our attention again rather to the desires and the ideas that were floating around our heads. We turn to the holy name and turn to Krishna ultimately with a mood of surrender. Then if we do that effectively, then the process of chanting and engaging in devotional service is so powerful that we become satisfied. We become detached, if you like. We become absorbed in devotional activities, and so material activities then don't have any attraction. In the second chapter of the 11th canto, a verse that we've already studied, as described, how by the performance of devotional service, one one's devotion increases. One directly experiences Krishna. Pratyaksavagamam damyam. You know, we get a direct experience of Krishna by the practice of devotional service. Bhakti pareshano bhavo virakti. And we become detached. And the example is given of a person who eats a meal. When you're eating a meal, automatically when you're eating, you're not interested in anything else. Right? When you're eating a meal, that's all you want to do. You don't want to do anything else. In fact, if somebody comes along and asks, you know, if you're eating your breakfast and somebody says, come on, let's have a game of cricket. You say, get out of here, I'm having my breakfast. Right? So, if we engage properly in devotional service, then our devotion increases, just like when we're... And devotion is what nourishes us, or bhakti is what nourishes the devotee, just as when we're... not nourishes, it satisfies us. Devotional service satisfies the devotee. Bhakti satisfies the devotee, just like when we're eating, one becomes satisfied. Similarly also, one gets direct perception of Krishna, and that perception of Krishna nourishes, just like when we're eating, then we automatically get nourishment from the food that we eat. And by that satisfaction and nourishment, we also attain detachment. When a person is eating a meal, they become uninterested in what's going on around them, But eventually, when they're eating, they also become uninterested even in the food that they're eating.
Right?
Because, you know, when you're eating and eating and eating, then like you brought all that Mexican with the prasadam from Radhanath Maharaj's Vyasapurja. But after a while, after eating and eating and eating, they go, okay, that's enough. No more rice. No more whatever. You know, you see that when everybody's eating a feast and they've all had everything to their satisfaction and they've finished eating their sweets, then take the rice around again. Show the people the rice. Yeah, probably have some more rice. Although it's interesting, you know, if you bring around the ice cream, they'll say, yeah, yeah, give me some more ice cream. But if you bring around the rice, they say, no, I couldn't eat that. If they're really satisfied, you know, you just have to bring one gulab jamun, show them a gulab jamun, and they go, no. Right? If you show them the gulab jamuns at the beginning, they say, yeah, give me 6 gulab jamuns. So, when we're eating, we become uninterested in anything else, but then eventually we become uninterested in even what we're eating. Become satisfied. Whereas in devotional service, we become completely absorbed in devotional service, but then we want more and more and more of it. It's not a material thing. It's actually a spiritual thing. It's described by Jiva Goswami in explaining this verse. So, you know, tushti chuda payanonu gasam. One, just as one eats a meal and one is satisfied, his taste, his desire to taste, you know, nice things is satisfied, he becomes nourished and he also becomes detached, you know, completely satisfied, detached from the activity. So similarly in devotional service, one becomes satisfied by engagement in devotional service, satisfied by the engagement in bhakti. One becomes connected to Krishna. There's a direct realization of one's relationship with the Lord. And one becomes automatically detached because of this higher taste and because of one's connection with Krishna and the satisfaction that comes from that. One becomes detached from material activities, this virakti. In the Ashtanga Yoga system, there's very much this concept or this idea of giving things up, right? You know, shutting down everything and giving things up. But in bhakti, there's not this sense of giving things up, but rather there's this understanding that everything belongs to Krishna, right? Idam Krishna, Idam Namama. It's not mine, it's Krishna's. So therefore, the concept of renunciation for the Vaishnava is not so much a sense of rejection or of giving up, but rather of utilizing all of these things in a detached way, understanding, you know, it's not mine, but ultimately it belongs to Krishna. In that sense, the devotee is described as akinchana, which means nothing belongs to him, but still he'll use things for Krishna's service. And not be disturbed by it. Right? So, the process of bhakti ultimately achieves the same result as that achieved by the yogis. But, in fact, it surpasses it. It surpasses it because the realization of the yogi is targeted at understanding the Paramatma. Then one is required to go further to understand Krishna, whereas one who follows the process of bhakti is automatically connected with Krishna and then automatically he understands all of the other aspects of the Lord's character, if you like, and his different manifestations. So I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Why?
Why
is sense control so important in spiritual life?
Well, most people are habituated to serving the senses, and so they're called go-das. And that means that whenever they see something and are attracted to it, they get disturbed by it and they want to pursue it, right? The advertising industry works on this principle, right? Dangle, you know, it's the donkey and the carrot, right? Track the carrot in front of the donkey and he goes, right? So people are like that. The advertising industry works on this principle that, you know, if you dangle things in front of people, their senses will be attracted to them and then they'll work hard to get them. And especially for things that they don't even need. Right? The advertising industry is expert in encouraging us to work hard for things that we don't even need. Right? Whereas in spiritual life, it's almost the antithesis. It is the antithesis, but rather we're encouraged to be satisfied with what is a simple existence, in other words, what we need, and not be distracted by superfluous to needs, requirements, right? So things that are beyond, because otherwise then one expends energy and effort pursuing things which ultimately lead to frustration. So the intelligent person doesn't strive for things that ultimately are of little benefit or of little use. So, you know, one has to be disciplined and one has to change one's focus. And in order to do that, one needs central mental intellectual control. Right? One has to take control. Otherwise, in this day and age, everybody's being manipulated. Right? And the material energy is expert in manipulating us by attracting us. Modes of material nature attract us. So, you know, we see something, we think, whoa, look at that, I want one of those. And in the process of becoming absorbed in that thing, whatever it might be, we forget Krishna. And we forget who we are. We get caught up in a bodily, basically materially bodily identification. And so that's why mental and sensual control is so important for a transcendentalist, so that one doesn't get distracted. Does that make sense? Good. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Mahaprasadam. Controlling the senses, ki jai.